Welcome back to another episode of The Witch Doctor, a serial fiction podcast brought to you by me, Aquanimous Rex. We are now into the last episode before the end of Chapter 2 and the fresh new beginning of Chapter 3. It's been under 2 months since The Witch Doctor has become a reality, and in that time, I feel as though I have made leaps and bounds. I've learned a lot, especially in the microphone and editing departments. I've also come to learn other things, like exactly how long these kind of projects take. The last episode, 18, Mundi, all things considered, took me about 5 hours to prepare. Between writing it and all the mishaps and outtakes that occur while recording, it ends up taking a lot longer than the length of the episode to make the episode. Luckily, I enjoy it, and I have no plans on stopping. I'm still learning how to balance my life, my work, my other writing projects, and The Witch Doctor, so that I don't have to sacrifice on quality. So I have decided that instead of releasing twice weekly, I am going to release one 30 or so minute long episode a week. If you remember the earlier episodes, they were only between 10 and 12 minutes long. I have since nearly doubled the lengths, and I prefer being able to delve a little deeper into each episode's story than simply putting out more episodes in a week. By only releasing one episode a week, and lengthening it a bit, I will be able to better manage my time, and will be able to give the Chapter 1 compilation project more of my attention. I really want to get those episodes re-recorded with a new cast of voice actors, and I just simply need more time in my week to do so. This will also give me more time, in general, to get the chapter compilations recorded after we complete them. Anyway, I won't waste any more of your time. I just want to thank you, sincerely, for listening. The Witch Doctor, Episode 19, The Interloper. How is it, then, that the incorporeal intelligences and agencies are therefore able to possess and control a physical body? It is contested that they are the works of the devil, and as such it is the allowance by God divine and by testing and judgment that such occurs, and only through the divine intervention of God that such a devil may be cast out and the person made whole. This has been shown to be false. Though my heart would not at first allow me to accept what my eyes had seen, and I fear I stumble further into heresy, and hence I have encrypted these writings. I have seen things which trouble my soul, primary of such being that I have myself witnessed the exorcism of spirits by ungodly men, and I have seen even Dominican brothers fall prey to the arbitrary, unholy whims of these incorporeal beings. How is it that such incorporeal intelligences are therefore able to possess and control a physical body? I cannot say that I know. Except for that the soul drives the body, and the soul seems to take on the shape of its perceptions, and as such, a soul may be a kind of receptacle, and as such, it may be that the spirits are a kind of impression, or make use of impressions, and that they imprint upon the souls of men orders and charges with which to spur them onward in the direction and towards the actions deemed necessary to the spirit. Excerpt from Der Hexendoctor, The Witch Doctor's Guidebook, written by an anonymous heretic philosopher, 1484. The forest tore at him, and his body was covered in gashes and cuts. The trees were acting as hackjob surgeons, carving into Abram as if attempting to vivisect him, unaware of their brittle nature. For his movement was steady and sure, and without regard for bodily harm, he plowed through them, snapping branch and twig through force of movement. Blood stained his feet, barefoot as he was, but his trek through the outer lair of the Wilder was not slowed in the least. His face was protected by the black mask he had worn during his witch-raiding days. His right hand held tight the 9mm handgun. The only piece of clothing he wore, a pair of stained boxer briefs.
"You don't want to be seen. The town is full of diabolists and witches. They are full of sin and have given themselves to the devil."
The angel had told him, the angel in his head,
"You must go to the interloper. You must stop him. I will show you the way, blessed warrior. Move through the forest, where you may proceed undetected."
And so Abram had seen the flame, the size of which would be produced by a candle, save for that it had no fuel source and illuminated nothing with its light. It levitated at eye level and floated through obstacles without being affected in the least. Abram followed the flame out and into the forest, his eyes transfixed.
"Why don't they want us to find Isaac?"
Abram had asked of the angel, which he knew to be an angel, for he felt in his heart the warmth of God's love, felt calm, and at peace for the first time in nearly a decade.
"The boy is important, Abram. God has sent me to ask a sacrifice of you, and the sacrifice is your son."
Abram hadn't balked at this, but he thought that had anyone else told him that his son was an intended sacrifice, he would have probably broken their jaw, if not their neck. But when the angel spoke inside his head, he knew what it said made sense.
"A sacrifice?"
Abram asked, and he could feel his own head nodding without his consent.
"Yes, Abram. But because our Lord Father is merciful and wise, he does not seek the life of your child. Isaac is not to be harmed in any way, but sacrifice he is, and sacrifice he must be. And he will be your sacrifice to your God, Abram, willingly and faithfully."
"Willingly and faithfully," Abram agreed.
The angel fell silent now, and Abram continued to follow the flame that did not bring light, which led him along the edge of the Wilder, past the fields where the townsfolk grew their potatoes, their invaluable staple food. Soon they passed by the center of town, barely visible behind the properly erected log palisades, the church building turned town hall, rising up starkly against the now starry night. The trees began to thin, and the vegetation-infested outer knoll came into view. An old gas station, rows of old houses mostly disassembled or decayed, various vehicles gutted for useful parts for either repair or trade. Abram looked momentarily at the rusted shell of a postal delivery van, but did not tarry long staring at it, his eyes quickly locating the floating flame. Covered in superficial cuts and gouges, which trickled blood across his nearly naked body, Abram stepped out into the asphalt streets, which now boasted a plethora of wildflowers and grass, growing up where years of harsh winter frost heaves had punctured and fractured what was once flat, solid road. The flame seemed to move faster now. It zigged and zagged through the remnants of the former world, and Abram walked briskly to keep up with it.
"Who is this interloper?"
Abram inquired aloud, hoping the angel would respond. For a moment, there was only silence. The only sound that of his bare feet slapping against intact segments of streets, and of insects chirping and buzzing.
"He is a witch, of the most diabolic creed, a murderer of children, a mutilator, and a heretic. He masquerades as a type of physician of the spirit, and uses this position to subvert and manipulate God-fearing devout into acts of sin. It was he who stole away the children, stole away your Isaac. He uses their blood for his foul potions and poultices, but has not yet slain your child. The others were not so lucky.
Abram gritted and bared his teeth underneath his mask, his hand clutching the gun even harder, knuckles whitening on the grip.
That fucker!
He snarled, and the flame halted, poised next to the corner of what used to be a fast food joint, now burnt half away and left in blackened ruins.
Enemies approach. Be silent, blessed warrior.
Silent Abram was, and he crept forward, crouched down low and handgun held at the ready. Abram peered around the corner of the building and saw two figures walking quickly back towards Noel proper. The man couldn't tell who they were, their faces obscured by shadows, but he could hear them talking, their voices carried through the air clearly.
We should have stayed and heard him out, Sarah,
one of the people said sternly, clearly upset. The voice was grating and guttural, and Abram knew he had never heard it before in his life, and the sound it made his stomach knot.
He's full of shit. That's all there is to it. He's making stuff up. Probably he was going to walk into town in the morning and offer to help us find the kids, for a price. And you know someone would have been dumb enough to pay him.
Abram felt the angel in his head stir.
There, Abram, look closer. You will see truth.
Bidden by his unseen companion, Abram did lean forward, and nearly gave himself away by gasping. For before him, walking shoulder to shoulder toward the town he had lived in now for years, were two ghoulish monstrosities, bearing rotting flesh, hanging skin, and too many appendages. They were hard to look at, and Abram found himself soon turning away.
They have been among you all along, blessed warrior. Now let them pass, so you may continue unhindered toward the most important goal. You must stop the interloper.
It was only a few moments later when the two things had left the area, their bestial voices fading as they walked. When he could only barely hear them, Abram rose. The flame darted forward, much more quickly than it had before, and the man ran to keep up with it. They arrived at an old garage, mostly intact, and the flame levitated in front of a heavily boarded up side door.
He's here.
Abram reached out with his free hand and pressed it against one of the semi-rotting boards holding the door in place.
I don't understand, he said.
The flame disappeared, leaving Abram alone with its strange missive, though he could sense that the angel itself had not departed.
It is false. Pull, Abram, and go forth and wreak havoc on this evil man.
Abram's hand shot forward on its own, gripping the boards and pulling, the door swinging out easily. It was a trick. Something to deter townsfolk and vagabonds, Abram saw. Beyond the doorway appeared to be an old office, but it was clothed in darkness and difficult to discern.
The devout, the dominion, the deity,
Abram said to himself, as if in prayer, steeling himself against what he might find, and he stepped into the building. Abram held the gun with both hands now, arms bent at the elbows, finger on the trigger. He looked at the trash-ridden office only down the sight of his firearm and walked slowly, deliberately forward. When he turned the corner and saw the mound of organic matter, the mushrooms glowing and pulsing with strange light, He froze in fear, pointing the gun at it, waiting for the mushrooms to move or strike. But nothing happened, and so he looked around more closely. There was a desk in the office, covered in diabolical and malevolent-looking tools, most certainly used for all kinds of witchery and black magic. In a fit of righteous rage, which overtook him suddenly and without warning, Abram lowered his gun and swept the contents of the desk off onto the ground, shattering many of the glass vials into shards. They leaked their liquids onto the floor and covered many of the other objects, coating the copper dagger and running off of the liquid-proof covers of the books which had been atop the desk.
"Devilry,"
Abram declared, solemn, and he resumed his stance, gun held aloft and ready to fire. He saw the second door, and with his left hand reached out to open it, twisting the knob and flinging it open, rushing into the room, prepared to spill the blood of the first person he saw. But he saw no one. Instead, he saw the isolation tank, though he knew not what it was, and the remains of the ritual that had been performed before his arrival by the man Abram had been sent to stop. A putrid stench filled the area, and Abram began to see strange writing cover the walls, not written in ink, but in deep crimson light that glowed faintly.
"You are in a place of evil, Abram. Guard your soul and peer into the witch's infernal cauldron,"
the angel bid him. Abram could not see a cauldron, but his head was turned forcefully, by his own neck no less, towards the wooden framework that held aloft the water-filled tarpaulin sheets. Abram walked over to the apparatus, gun pointed over its edge, ready for anything to pop out at him, ready with 10 rounds of ammunition, ready to perforate and puncture anything which moved. But nothing jumped out at him as he approached, and he could only barely see over the top of the tank.
"It is safe, Abram. God has blessed our mission, and the beast lay sleeping. Climb atop and claim your victory in the name of the Lord Father."
Abram, gun still in hand, scrambled up the side of the framework and balanced, standing on its edge, peering down into what looked like a giant vat of blood. Floating on his back, in the center, was a naked man with cloth tied around his eyes, and a black 5-pointed star marked on his forehead. The witch was partially submerged in the blood, and seemingly sleeping, but he floated without motion near the top, his face staying above the thick organic liquid. Abram felt sick to his stomach, but he held the gun with one hand, pointing it at the motionless figure.
"Do it,"
the angel ordered, and Abram felt his finger tighten, though whether he was the one moving his finger or the angel, he could not tell. But before he squeezed it all the way, before he opened up this child thief, this Satanist, Abram heard a scream, shrill and loud, from behind him, and on reflex turned to face the intruder. At the office door stood the two ghouls he had seen earlier. They stood still, mouths agape, staring at him. He raised the gun, aimed, and fired at the one closest to him. The gun roared, the gunshot sounding as though it were a cannon blast in such confined space, and the ghoul's chest opened up, spraying its bile against the wall behind it, and it fell to the ground, the other monster shrieking.
"Sarah!"
it screamed, and rushed down to its fallen kin. Abram pointed the gun at the second creature, and for a moment his vision blurred, and he saw not monsters, but people. Women, he recognized. His stepdaughters. One of them lying on the ground, groaning and clutching at herself, blood pouring from between her fingers. This has been The Witch Doctor, Episode 19, The Interloper, by Equanimous Rex. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for future episodes. Music attribution. The intro is Come Play With Me by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. The outro is Iron Horse, also by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Both of the songs are licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.